Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing through topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with another fantastic episode for you guys today, episode 250 of the podcast. Can you believe it? In July of 2023, July 1st to be exact, I elected to start this podcast just to kind of do it. You know, I drove around just listening to podcasts all the time, and I was like, you know what? I think I could start a podcast. And 250 episodes later is currently December 28th, 2025. What are we looking at there? About 2.5 years later. Wow. Wow. Just start it. Stay with it. Am I big yet? No. No, but the keyword is yet. We will soon be big. 2026, we are going to amp things up. So, on today's episode, got a lot of fun stuff to talk to you guys about. First up, week 17 of the NFL. It's actually currently going on as we are recording this, but we're going to talk about the games that went down on Saturday, the 27th, and just about what's currently going on with the NFL as we head into the final week and then the playoffs. We're also going to be talking about a hit TV show I watched on Netflix called Beef, a hit new movie that's out called Avatar Fire and Ash. We're also going to rank every single WWE PLE, which is premium live event of the year. We are going to rank every single UFC pay-per-view that went down in 2025, or numbered event, if you will, as now that's apparently not a thing. Pay-per-views don't exist anymore in the UFC world, so I guess this is the final pay-per-view ranking, but it obviously won't be. But without further ado, guys, let's dive into everything. Let's not waste any time. And kicking things off, you should already have known this by now, little UFC, there's no new fights to talk about just yet. We're going to hold off on new UFC fights, but we will dive right into our NFL discussions for week 17, and we had two games take place on Saturday. I've already discussed on the last episode our Christmas Day games, which are all, you know, kind of mediocre, but games yesterday weren't too bad. Texans taking on the Chargers. Texans win 20-16 in Los Angeles, and also moving to the sixth seed for the playoffs. Now, this was a, you know, interesting game all around. CJ Stroud was decent, 244 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Woody Marks had 71 yards on the ground, which was decent. Jawar Jordan took over for Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb literally had 1 carry. Like, I don't know if that boy just isn't, like, useful to them or something, but downfall on Nick Chubb, pretty freaking sad. Wide receiver-wise, Jaden Higgins had 2 catches, 88 yards for a touchdown. The longest was a 75-yard touchdown, which kind of kicked off the game for the Texans. Nico Collins, pretty quiet game, 3 catches for 57 yards, and Jalen Noel on 3 catches for 54 yards pulled in the second touchdown that the Texans got. For the Chargers, Justin Herbert, 236 yards, touchdown and a pick, was also sacked 5 times, and also was the lead rusher with 37 yards. He was kind of trying to do anything he could to get them in the lead, and just for the life of them, just couldn't pull it together. Quentin Johnson, 5 catches, 98 yards, was the stud. And Arondo Gadsden the second, 3 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Ladd McConkey and Keenan Allen both only had 1 catch. Pretty brutal. But yeah, I mean, game starts off, it's 14-rip. In the first 6 minutes of the game for the Texans, Cam Dicker hits a field goal midway through the second quarter, making it 14-3. Heading into the third, halfway through the third, field goal from the Texans makes it 17-3. Then the Chargers would get their only touchdown of the game. Actually, they had 2 touchdowns, but Cam Dicker missed the extra point. That's why it was 20-16. And then just Chargers couldn't get the ball back, and Texans were victorious. So great win for the Texans at the end of the day. This moves them from 7-6. And, you know, it's a really big switch up, as it's the decision between who will play the 3 seed and who will play the 2 seed. So we're going to have to see what takes place there. I believe as of of right now, Patriots will be taking on the Chargers, which I think is a favorable matchup for the Patriots, and the Texans will be taking on divisional friend, the Jaguars. So, very interesting matchups all the way around in the AFC, and Texans are locked in, Chargers are locked in for the playoffs. The only real thing we're waiting on to see is if the Ravens can make the playoffs, and they had a thunderous victory with Lamar Jackson down as they defeated the Packers 41-24. Just crazy, and it was the Derrick Henry show, and the best part is that the experts were saying Derrick Henry was in for a slow game. Yeah, right. Yeah, should have known better than to listen to those fools, because it was a excellent game for Derrick Henry. Four touchdowns for him. He also had 216 yards on 36 carries. They kind of learned early on that, yeah, Derrick Henry is just chewing up this offense. Let's just keep giving him the ball. So great work there. Zay Flowers also caught a touchdown on four catches, and Mark Andrews added 28 yards on four catches. Tyler Huntley, only 107 passing yards, but still got the win. So at the end of the day, cannot hate on the guy. And yeah, I mean, this just started out with a great start to the game for the Ravens. They match a, I think it was like a, I want to say, eight minute opening drive with a Derrick Henry touchdown. Then Malik Willis answers within a minute to Christian Watson. But then second quarter, all going to the Ravens, outscores them 20-7, heading into the third. 10 unanswered points made it 27-24, heading into the fourth, and then it was just all the Ravens. Two touchdowns, two extra points, easy money. 414 total yards for the Ravens, including 307 rushing yards. Amazing work. They move to 8-8. Of course, the Packers, with a 9-6-1 record, are locked in for that number 7 seed in the playoffs. Now, as for the Ravens, they will be rooting for the Steelers to lose, and as we check in with the current slate of games, right now every game is just about at halftime or going to over the half. The Steelers are losing to the Browns 10-6 in the early stages of quarter number 3, so not super fascinating. I would have had the Steelers winning that, so I hope they still pull it out. Buccaneers are down 17-7 to the Dolphins in a game they have to win if they want to make the playoffs, and as for the team they need to lose, Panthers are tied with the Seahawks 3-3 at halftime. You can't make it up. Bengals are cooking the Cardinals right now 23-7. Titans are up over the Saints 20-10 at the half. And the Colts, who are out of the playoffs, are beating the Jaguars heading into the second half. Can't even make it up. And as for that Patriots team we're talking about, 35-3 are killing the New York Jets. But for the four matchups that have not taken place right now, Giants and Raiders, I don't really know. You know, both teams are 2-13. I think they both, it would be in their best interest to lose. So at the end of the day, I'm just going to go with the Giants. You would think they're better than the Raiders, but you also have to know that the Raiders don't have Brock Bowers. They're going to probably be relying heavily on Ashton Jeanty, and the Giants suck. So I don't really know what's going to cover that, but I'm going to go with the Giants to pull that out. But then we get into our final three games, and, you know, I'll talk about the Monday Night Football game real quick, Rams at Falcons. It should be a Rams win. You would think it would be a Rams win, but you never know. Sometimes it gets kind of tricky with these Monday Night games, but I am going to predict the Rams to dethrone the Jaguars in, you know, very quick fashion. Now, as for the two best games of the week, Eagles-Bills, 325, America's game of the week. This is a massive matchup for both teams. You know, Bills are looking to get that fifth seed in the playoffs, and, you know, being 11-4 right now, it's a battle between the Chargers and Texans. They do currently hold it, but they have to win that, because if they lose, they could fall anywhere between that 5-7, and that's a difference between playing the Steelers or Ravens and playing the Patriots. So drastic difference there. And as for the Eagles, you know, on the other side of the spectrum, they're just trying to secure that number 3 spot in the playoffs. They don't want to run into any issues where they fall to the fourth seed, which actually, the fourth seed is impossible. But I think actually, no, it's the potential if they win and the Bears lose, or if they win out and the Bears lose out, they could sneak up to the number 2 seed. So pivotal game for both of those teams. I am going to predict the Eagles to win just because they're underdogs. And, you know, I think in a matchup like this, going with the underdog is some good betting line money action. Now, as for Sunday Night Football, Bears and 49ers, I don't know. know. I really don't, because this Bears team has proven that they are legit. They're good, but this 49ers team has been terrifying. Like, I don't know what they just happened to them to this end stretch here, but listen to these scores, all right? 48-27, 37-24, 26-8, 20-9, 41-22. I mean, they have just been running up the scores. And when we look at their last two losses, it's to the Rams and the Texans. Okay, and they also have not lost since November 9th. Okay, so it's been a crazy run to end the season. Massive game for both of these teams, and, you know, it's not an easy run for either of them. You know, they're going to have to play hard till the end of the season. And who do they play after they play each other? Divisional rivals and the Packers and Seahawks, respectively. So I am going to predict the Bears just because I'm on the Bears bandwagon. I mean, you got to get on it before everyone else gets on it. And you know what? I'm on it because my whole family's Bears fans. If no one knew that, my whole family is Bears fans. So we're going to go with the Bears to defeat the 49ers in what should hopefully just be an entertaining Sunday night football game. And I'll tell you guys what else is entertaining. That is when someone recommends you a TV show and it actually turns out to be as good as everyone says it is. And I've been told by many people to watch Beef. Beef is just a single season. It's labeled as a drama. There's also comedy. There's also all sorts of emotions you feel in the show. And it came out in 2023 and it stars Ollie Wong and Stephen Hwin as Danny Cho and Amy Lau. And you also have David Cho in here, also a very great actor. You also have Maria Bello. She was, of course, the wife to Kevin James in the, oh my gosh, what are those movies called? Grown Ups, the Grown Ups movies. Love those films. And then Stephen Hwin, you'll recognize him from, goodness me, he's the voice of, oh my goodness, the main guy in Invincible. He was also in The Walking Dead. I mean, he's been in a lot of good stuff. He's been killing it as an actor. And then you also have another of other people. Andrew Santino is in this, and I also kind of recognize a number of other actors, but the main gist of this show, and it's just kind of crazy how it goes, is it literally starts out with just a road rage incident where, you know, this character played by Stephen Hwin is just having a bad day. You learn to find out that he was going to a store to buy, I think it was ovens to, like, kill himself. Is a very weird plan he had. And Amy Lau's character, for some reason, is honking at him, and he gets pissed, and she flips him off and drives away. And from there, they're just chasing each other all over a neighborhood. Everything's going crazy, and then it just spirals more, and then they're looking for each other. They're going to each other's houses, and it truly just continues to just multiply and multiply, and it's nuts. It's utterly nuts, and I'm not even going to spoil anything because it's not worth spoiling, but just to let you know how good this is, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8 out of 10 on IMDb, but a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes lets you know all you need to know about this show, and it also deals about wanting material wealth and dealing with God. It also deals about self-interest. It deals about work.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With your family, it deals about dealing with past trauma, and the ending to this, you know, obviously the ending, it's more of like, you know, it's a rewarding ending, but it's also like kind of like an open ending. But I do still think it is good. It's one of those shows where I recommend to everyone. It gets a 9 out of 10 for me. That's all I want to say on this is Beef is just that freaking good. 10 episodes, and every single one leaves you wanting more. It's like, I'll just drop like a couple spoilers, so if you want to skip ahead, do that. But there's this moment where, you know, Amy Lau's character is kind of, she's married, by the way, married with a kid. Stephen Wynn's character is living with his brother, and it's just kind of living at like this crappy apartment. And she's like catfishing him, but turns out she's catfishing his younger brother. And he comes to meet her at the shop she works at, and they're basically talking to each other, and he ends up kissing her, and she kisses him back, which is just this crazy moment because she's married, for goodness sakes. And then the episode just ends, you're like, well, I gotta see what happens next. And that's one of the most genius things about this show, is it just leaves you wanting more with every single episode. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about that there would be a second season, but that's been confirmed for a while, and just nothing has happened. You know, it's not really the case. One of the main highlights of the show is it's only 30 to 40 minutes per episode, which is super fantastic. And it's just great. It really is great. So if they do make a Beef Season 2, that would be fantastic. And I believe this was confirmed in early 2025, so I don't know if they're, you know, how long it'll take for this to come to fruition. But amazing work. And I haven't really seen Ali Wong in anything. I believe she might be a comedian or something, but David Cho. David Cho is just a legend of the game. He has a YouTube channel. He's an artist. I think he's most famous for, he painted a giant mural at the Facebook headquarters, and they gave him a bunch of stock instead of like a set of money, and he became a millionaire off of that. And kind of, he's gone on Joe Rogan. He's gone on a number of podcasts. Super cool guy. So it was fun seeing him play kind of the villain in this, which is entertaining. And what you also see is you feel different emotions for every character at different points, because at one point, you're on Amy's side, then you're on Stephen Wynn's character's side. It just keeps flip-flopping as the episodes go and go and go, and it's phenomenal. It really is phenomenal, so go check out Beef. It's on Netflix, and it's an easy watch. You can watch it in a day, for goodness sakes. You can watch it in a weekend. I think I watched it over like a four-day period, just popping in here and there, and it's really good. Really good, and you also just see like the differences between the ultra rich, the medium rich, and the kind of like poor side of things. And you see, one of my favorite elements is thinking you're more better off than you are, trusting your own instincts rather than trusting, say, your close relatives or God, for example. So, Beef, it's on Netflix. Go check it out. It is phenomenal. But the movie I've been waiting to talk with you guys about, it is easily one of my favorite movies of 2025. It is Avatar, Fire and Ash. And yes, it is as good as advertised. Now, 66% Rotten Tomatoes, 7.5 out of 10 IMDb. You know, it's impossible to outdo the first film. The first film is just a generational film, just a, you know, a success beyond anything anyone could ever imagine. But for this film, I think it is the second best in the franchise. It kind of completes this trilogy. I do have it better as Way of Water. It's essentially a direct sequel to The Way of Water, and it's also amazing. And for being a 3-hour-and-17-minute film, it really is impressive with how well the pacing is. And it didn't feel long in the sense of, when will this end? It felt long in the sense of, is this the third act? Is this the third act? Like, you get to the third act, and it's so rewarding. It is truly so rewarding. And the entire plot of this is that, you know, they are, of course, the battle between the Na'vi and the humans. But then you bring in this Ash people. And, you know, I do got to shout out the cast for this, because Ona Chaplin, who, of course, played Robb Stark's wife in Game of Thrones, was phenomenal as the villain in this. She played Varong, and Varong was just evil and just wanted destruction, and it was brilliant. And then you also have Stephen Lang returning as Miles Quaritch, and he is phenomenal in this, I must say. Sigourney Weaver is amazing, playing the young Kiri in this. And of course, Zoe Saldana and Sam Worthington as Neytiri and Jake Sully are just out of this world. It's just great. It's just great. You also have Edie Falco, of course, Tony Soprano's wife on the show, Soprano's love scene. Her, but it's amazing. I think it's an amazing film. The graphics are insane. The fight scenes are insane. And you feel such reward for these characters. You know, Jake Champion, who plays Miles Spider in the film, he's great. He is simply fantastic. And Brittan Dalton as Loak, he is great in this. Trinity Bliss as Tuk. She plays the little girl character in this. Amazing as well. I mean, just head to toe. Head to toe, the cast is phenomenal. And one of the things I love about this cast is there isn't really that many big names in this. Obviously, you have your heavy hitters across the board, your Saldanas, your Langs, your Weavers, your Winslets, your, just everyone. But just head to toe, an amazing film. And one of the good things, it has a rewarding ending where you can conclude the story here. But one of the crazy things is the director, James Cameron, said is that you're either getting Avatar 4 and 5 or the story's ending here. And if the story's ending here, he's going to hold a press conference to let you know how the entire story was going to end, which I just find utterly insane that that's what he's choosing to do. And I'm okay with having it give us another Avatar film, say in 2029 and then in 2034, for goodness sakes, or you conclude it here. because it really ends, you know, with a spoiler alert, with everyone coming along happy and the entire family survives to the end. Obviously, you have kind of side characters that have died along the way. And, you know, one thing I, you know, that they've just continuously done with the freaking Avatar movies, they did it in the last one, they did it in this one, is just having Stephen Lang and having Varong survive. It's like you can never just kill the big bads. You can never do it, but this is great. This is phenomenal. Avatar, Fire and Ash. And in two episodes on the podcast, we will be doing my top 10 movies I saw in 2025. And might I say, it wasn't the best year of me seeing movies. I missed out on a lot of the heavy hitters this year. So I'd say my top three are like, these are amazing movies. And the rest are kind of like, yeah, I saw this and it's in my top 10. But Avatar, Fire and Ash, go check it out. I think it's really worth it on the big screen. You know, obviously, if you don't have the patience for it, that sucks. You're not going to be able to do it. But, you know, I say check it out and give it a shot because it is phenomenal. And you honestly don't have to watch The Way of Water or the first film, like, you know, obviously, like, back to back. But I would still encourage you to, you know, watch them before seeing this movie. But Avatar, Fire and Ash, going to get an 8 out of 10 for me on the Zachary Ruger scale of ranking movies. But yeah, it's great. Go check it out. And I'll tell you something else that you got to check out if you haven't checked it out. And that is the WWE, because WWE was on fire in 2025 to an extent. They had a lot of duds, but they had a lot of successes. So what I'm doing, I didn't do it last year, but I've elected to do it this year, as I was able to catch every single WWE PLE of the year, is I went through and ranked all 14 WWE PLEs that took place in 2025. And funny enough, there was 13 UFC events, so almost correlation between the two, who are both owned under TKO. And now SummerSlam and WrestleMania are both single events, but they split them into night one and night two. So I ranked each night separately as its own event because that's kind of how it is. So without further ado, here is every single WWE PLE that happened in 2025 ranked from best to worst. So I guess we're going to go from worst to best. That's how you're supposed to do it. You go with the worst and you end with the best. So kicking off our list at number 14, the worst WWE PLE of the year. And it actually is like the worst. Like, it's hilarious. Like, sometimes like people debate like, no, this is the consensus worst WWE PLE of the year. And it is WrestlePalooza. That's right. If you've heard about WrestlePalooza, it was the first ever PLE held on ESPN. If you weren't aware, WWE is now on ESPN for their premium live events. It was on September 20th in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the Gainbridge Fieldhouse. 15,000 people were in attendance, and we started off, and it was pretty hype. Pretty hype start to get it going. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. The entrances are thunderous. It's amazing. And then Brock Lesnar squashes John Cena. And I still don't understand the call. I don't think anyone understands the call. Even ESPN, for a predetermined show, did not understand the call. And from there, the energy was just sucked out of the arena. Now, after that, you had The Vision, Bronson Reed, and Bron Breakker taking on the Usos in a 17-minute match with LA Knight as a special guest referee, and the crowd just wasn't into it, and it was a run-of-the-mill match that we had seen countless times on Monday Night Raw. After that, easily the best match of the night, Steffi Vacare versus Io Sky for the vacant Women's World Championship, and Steffi Vacare won. So that was the highlight. That was some good. That was some positive. And after that, we then had CM Punk and AJ Lee defeating Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. Now, it was a good match. It was just long. It was a 29-minute match, and I don't think it was bad. I don't think it was anything, like, it just wasn't anything special. It was a good match. I'd even say between great and good, it's right in the middle there. But for some reason, just wasn't coming together. Just wasn't coming together, and, you know, it just kind of left everyone just kind of like, okay, this was good. This was good, but we still need more. Like, this is WrestlePalooza. This should be, you know, the best wrestling event of the year, we were promised. And instead, it's just brutally mediocre. So we're going to have to see what happens there with that feud, because that all still continues. But we got to the main event. We got to the main event of WrestlePalooza, and it was Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre. And everyone's thinking, like, okay, this show has been so bad. It's been so mediocre. Let's get through it. Let's end it with a bang. Drew McIntyre wins, or Randy Orton comes out and turns heel. And instead, Cody Rhodes just casually defends the belt. 17-minute match. I think he hit maybe one or two crossroads, and that was that. It was just so dull, so boring. Everyone was left wanting more, and thunderous boos were heard throughout the arena. So WrestlePalooza, easily the worst event of the year. Like, just, I think it's because it was so gassed up. It was so gassed up. It was so exciting. And then just nothing. Just nada. Just boring, bland, dull, and we'll pass on it. WrestlePalooza, number 14 on the list. And coming in at number 13, the final PLE of the year, Survivor Series War Games 2025, going down at Petco Park in San Diego. 46,000 people in attendance November 29th. And I think this was the year we all kind of just like realized, like, okay, we need to be done with the War Games. The War Games is just so strung out, so overdone, and it needs to come to a end. So got things going with Team Rhea versus Team Asuka in the Women's War Games matchups. Went 41 minutes, the longest matchup of the night. And it was just whatever. It was just whatever. And in fact, all it's remembered for is this brutal spot where you have Io Sky putting a trash can over herself and doing like a front flip through a bunch of the other women just standing on the mat. And the setup to the spot is cringy. The follow-up is after. And it just felt like a whole bunch of nothing. Like, it really did. It felt so forced, just so unnecessary. And the only redeeming thing for this is that it was a War Games match. You had a bunch of stars in it, and it was okay. And one of the also things that they didn't do this year was
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Have everyone stand in the shark cages. That's what makes War Games so special. Everyone's standing in the shark cages, and then the shark cage is opened by the ref. Then you're able to go out. And I mean, remember that match, the moment between Roman Reigns and CM Punk last year is the most viral clip that WWE has ever had on their social media. Over 165 million views on it. Simply incredible. And, you know, this started off just kind of mediocre. After that, Dominic Mysterio defeats John Cena to regain the Intercontinental Championship. 16-minute match. And it wasn't bad, but we had just seen it on Monday Night Raw, and the Monday Night Raw matchup was better. It also was so obvious they were going to have Dom win the Intercontinental Championship back. Liv Morgan returned. You also had Roxanne Perez and Raquel Rodriguez getting the better of John Cena for some reason. He was putting them over. You did have him doing like a double AA on Finn Balor at JD McDonough, which was pretty cool. But, you know, other than that, just kind of whatever. Kind of whatever. And then after that, Steffi Vacher defeats Nikki Bella to retain the Women's World Championship. 12-minute match. And it was just kind of like, all right, decent match. No one thought Nikki Bella was going to win. You know, I don't know why these two are still feuding, but okay, let's wrap things up with a massive main event. And you had The Vision, which was Logan Paul, Drew McIntyre, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, and Brock Lesnar defeating the team of CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, The Usos, Jan Jimmy, and Roman Reigns in a 40-minute War Games match. And, you know, a lot of fun moments in this. It was a decent, like, it's not a bad match. At the end of the day, it's not a bad match. It's entertaining, a lot of fun moments. But just, you know, it was just kind of like, this is, they're just throwing a bunch of stars at us and expecting us to not care that there's no storyline. There was no storyline here. Then to make matters worse, we had a masked figure come in, the year of the masked figure. You know, you have it happen at Money in the Bank. Oh, it's R-Truth. And you have it at Clash of Paris. Oh, it's Becky Lynch, which we'll talk about both of those soon. And then, oh, you have it here, and they don't even reveal it. They don't even reveal who the masked figure is. It was, of course, revealed on Raw. Like, 3 weeks later, it was Austin Theory. Just such a letdown of a reveal. And, yeah, it was kind of whatever. Like, it wasn't anything. Like, Survivor Series War Games was okay, but that's the issue. It was just okay. So, I think for next year, we get back to the elimination matches, not this War Games, or we get back to SmackDown versus Raw, if you will. We need to spice it up here, because Survivor Series War Games here was just not it. So, it's, you know, we've talked about before on the podcast, but does come in at number 13 on our list. Now, coming in at number 13, or not number 13, number 12, if I can speak correctly, on the list, we have WrestleMania Night 2. That is right. What is supposed to be the best, the biggest night of WrestleMania ended up being the worst. Just crazy. Just crazy. Just such a letdown head to toe. Now, there were some good moments. I'll say that there were some fun moments. We got the card going. All right, I suppose I should let you all know, of course, if you weren't aware, WrestleMania 41 going down in Las Vegas, of course, at Allegiant Stadium. You had 60,000 people in attendance for night two, which was Cody Rhodes versus John Cena. And we got the night kicked off with one of the best matchups of the year. I kid you not, Io Sky defending her Women's World Championship in a triple threat match against Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley. Only a 14-minute match. It felt way longer than that. I think that was the theme of night two. A lot of these matchups felt way longer, and the ones that, you know, felt short should have been longer, but great matchup. Io Sky shockingly wins, hit a great, like, moonsault finish, whatever it was, on top of Bianca Belair or Rhea Ripley, whoever was pinning the other, to win, and it was phenomenal. Such a great way to kick off WrestleMania Night 2, which kind of gave us hope after the kind of, not necessarily letdown that Night 1 was, because Night 1 was pretty good, but, you know, Night 1 was just kind of like, it ended on a bang, but everything else was kind of, you know, whatever. So we were hoping Night 2 would get us going really good, and after that, we had a Sin City street fight, Drew McIntyre, Damian Priest. Did it feel like a glorified SmackDown matchup? Yes, but still, Sin City street fight, tables, ladders, chairs, there was no ladders or chairs, but, you know, a lot of fun weapons were used, and Drew McIntyre wins. That was good. And then Dirty Dominic Mysterio defeats Bron Breakker, Finn Balor, Penta in a 10-minute match to become the new Intercontinental Champion. What a moment. Truly, 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 what a moment. I mean, and then, you know, they got the call live on the broadcast. Triple H was saying, no one heard this, but it was telling him to run back down the ramp. You have to, you know, go celebrate back in the ring. Super fun moment. After that, it was the Randy Orton Open Challenge, and they elected Joe Hendry to come out in a 3-minute squash match. Now, it wasn't, like, awful, but it's also kind of like, okay, Randy Orton squashes Joe Hendry. 3 minutes. We want it to be some big return or something, and it wasn't. And then, after that, Logan Paul and AJ Styles in a 17-minute matchup, which literally was just, like, made for a moment where Logan Paul was vlogging himself, or, like, maybe there was a drone flying around and he did something with that. I have no idea, but it was just such a letdown of a match. You had Karrion Kross get involved and that storyline went nowhere. Just kind of mid. Then the second to last matchup of the night, Lara Valkyria teams with her mystery partner, which is Becky Lynch. And they come down and they defeat Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. Not a bad match. You know, it's whatever. 8 minutes. It was okay. And then, of course, the ending. John Cena, Cody Rhodes for the Undisputed WWE Championship. 21-minute matchup, which felt, I kid you not, like a 40-minute snooze fest. This matchup was just awful, and I know what they were going for, like John Cena's trying to ruin wrestling, but doing it on your biggest show, then of course the entire fiasco with Travis Scott, just the disaster, then that's it. All it is Travis Scott comes out, like, that is just, just so dull and boring. And the worst part is that it's John Cena winning the 17th World Championship, and it's easily one of the worst times he's ever won it. It easily is one of the worst matchups of the year. And you know the only worse matchup than this was John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. All right, I kid you not. How crazy can it be that John Cena had some of the best matchups of the year and also some of the worst? That's the retirement turf, you guys. So WrestleMania Night 2, such a bad letdown. And the worst part is it literally started good, and like it was kind of just like a downward spiral. Like you're watching like a stock, you're watching Bitcoin, and the price is just dropping, dropping, dropping. That was Night 2 of WrestleMania. But it's not like WWE can fail all of their big events, right? Right? Absolutely it can. As WWE Money in the Bank comes in at number 11. That is right, Money in the Bank coming to you from the Intuit Dome in, where was it at? Inglewood, California. Absolutely. 17,000 happened in June, and just a weird, just, you know, weird, just a card as a whole. Card as a whole was kind of weird, but we kicked things going. Naomi wins the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And one of the key things this year with the women's matchups is that they were all letdowns. And that's awful because 2024 had some of the best. You know, the Royal Rumble was the letdown. Women's Money in the Bank matchup was a letdown. The War Games was a letdown. And it's kind of sad because there were so many great individual women's matchups. It's like when we put them all together, you know, they just couldn't gel at all. And I'll think that's one thing here is that Vakair, Roxanne Perez, Rhea Ripley, Julia, Alexa Bliss, Naomi. It's really only Alexa Bliss and Naomi that had ladder match experience, and it showed here. 25 minutes, and the only good thing is that the correct winner won in Naomi. And then after that, we followed up with Dominic Mysterio defeating Octagon Jr. to retain the Intercontinental Championship in a sub-5-minute match. And, you know, this was just so random. They had a great AAA match or AAA event earlier in the day, and then basically Dominic Mysterio hosted an open challenge, and Octagon Jr. answered it. And no one even knew this was happening until legit the event had started. So that was mediocre. One of the better matchups was Becky Lynch defeating Lyra Valkyria. Great match. That was super good. Their trilogy or quadrilogy, however many matchups they had in the early part of the year, was fantastic. And then the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, Seth Rollins, Andrade, El Grande Americano, LA Knight, Penta, and Solo Sikoa, it was all right. You know, 33 minutes, it's not on the bad side of things, it's not on the good side of things, it's just kind of in the middle, like, okay, decent ladder match, and Seth Rollins winning was the correct decision, but it's also the predictable decision. And I think that's the issue is, you know, we're watching this, we're like, are they finally going to push Andrade? No. Oh my gosh, is El Grande Americano going to win it? No. Oh my gosh, Penta? No. Solo Sikoa? Actually, Jacob Fatu turned on Solo Sikoa in this matchup. And then LA Knight. And they did the LA Knight pump fake yet again. And they've been doing it for the last 3 freaking years. They keep teasing LA Knight winning Money in the Bank. And it went to Seth Rollins. But you know what? It was okay at the end of the day. And then the main event, Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso defeating John Cena and Logan Paul in a tag team matchup. And it was an okay match. I think it surprised a lot of people. I think a lot of people are thinking it was going to kind of be whatever. But it was actually pretty good. A lot of fun moments through the table, Logan Paul doing some great dives, and then, of course, R-Truth gets involved, takes out John Cena, Cody Rhodes hits the crossroads on John Cena, and for the 3rd time in the last 4 years, we've had a Survivor Series, not Survivor Series, a Money in the Bank end with a tag team matchup where the champion who is pinned ends up winning at, SummerSlam. It was pretty funny how that works, but, it is what it is. Money in the Bank, it was mediocre, it was whatever, comes in at number 11, but with that, we can now get into the top 10 PLEs of the year for the WWE. And let me just say, you know, coming at number 10 here, Backlash. Backlash St. Louis. I was surprised. I was fairly surprised because, you know, this was pretty good. It was really good. You know, Enterprise Center, St. Louis, Missouri, 17,000 in attendance, May 10th. This was the follow-up to WrestleMania, and you had John Cena versus Randy Orton, and that's what the entire show was booked around. And of course, that was the main event. They gave him 27 minutes and 50 seconds. It was phenomenal. Just fan service, just these two doing the hits one last time. Great, great. No complaints there whatsoever. You also had Jacob Fatu retaining his United States Championship, including the debut of JC Mateo. Oh, funny. JC Mateo, that little clown. You, of course, had the fantastic Intercontinental Championship match between Lyra Valkyrie and Becky Lynch. That was great. Dominic Mysterio and Penta was all right. And then Gunther defeated Pat McAfee in a 14-minute match, which was just so serious. Like, they treated it as such, like, a serious matchup. It was so funny. Like, it was actually so comical. Or it's like, Pat McAfee is going to fight Gunther to the death, and it's just a normal WWE match. But, you know, head to toe, it was all right. It was all right. Nothing too special. Nothing just, like, out of the woodwork. But John Cena and Randy Orton is what made this card. And, you know, from here on out, I consider the rest of the year pretty good. You know, we have our complaints with what we talked about before, but getting into the top 10 here, all of this super duper good. So with that, we move along. And might I just say is that that Becky Lynch Lyra Valkyrie match needs to get some more love because it was truly, 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 truly super good. And coming in at number 9 for me, you know, some people may actually have this higher on the list, but I have Clash in Paris. I have Clash in Paris, 30,000 in attendance in France, August 31st, just a fantastic event. It really was. And, you know, the only reason it doesn't get higher for me is just because I just think that the main event just shouldn't have been the main event. And that's what it is. You know, we kick off the card, Roman Reigns and Bronson Reed have a singles match, and Roman Reigns wins, which is an odd choice. And then we legit have, like, a 30-minute segment where Roman Reigns gets killed by Bronson Reed, gets killed by Braun Breaker. You then have the Usos get involved. It was just such, like, the longest segment ever for no reason. It was so funny. And then after that, like, this would be going on for an hour. You get the Wyatt Six defending the belts against the Street Profits, and we kept teasing the Street Profits breakup, and just never happened. So that was whatever. You then had the dud, which was Becky Lynch versus Nikki Bella for the Intercontinental Championship. Just a bad match. At the end of the day, very bad match. But then back-to-back heaters, Rusev defeats Sheamus in a good old-fashioned Donnybrook match. Just bringing out a bunch of random, like, Irish, Russian weapons and just going to war. Fantastic. And then the masterpiece, John Cena, Logan Paul. Whatever you thought about Logan Paul, you know, he just continues to impress me, and I love him, and it's even getting to a point where it's, like, hard to even picture him as a heel. Like, he's just so likable as a professional wrestler, and him and John Cena hitting just cross clash, Clash of Styles, like, hitting AJ Styles finisher, hitting the Edge finisher, like, just doing the most random moves ever to each other. It was phenomenal, gave him 26 minutes, longest match of the night, and so many pump fakes. Might I add, like, Logan Paul was kicking out of some crazy moves, and then there were some moments where he thought John Cena was actually going to lose to Logan Paul, and he ended up not losing, and it was just fantastic. And then we get to the main event, which was the Fatal 4-Way match for the World Heavyweight Championship, Seth Rollins, CM Punk, Jey Uso, LA Knight, and, you know, the main thing this whole night was that Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, banned from ringside, which means Paul Heyman's going to need to find the fourth member of the Vision to help out. But what ended up happening is a decent match. You know, nothing special, nothing too much, but it was Becky Lynch who ended up helping Seth Rollins retain by, like, low-blowing CM Punk. So it was kind of whatever. It was kind of, you know, Jey Uso and LA Knight didn't really see them winning. They also had Jey Uso come in injured as usual, which is just getting annoying. And, you know, at the end of the day, Seth Rollins wins, comes out on top. But the reason it comes in at number 9 here is just for how amazing John Cena, Logan Paul was and how amazing Rusev versus Sheamus was. So end of the day, fantastic. Comes in at number 9. Absolutely loved it. And then, coming in at number 8 is going to be WWE Night of Champions. What a shockingly good event. It really was. Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, 25,000 in attendance. This was great. This was great coming to you. June 28th, there was a lot of PLEs this year. Let me freaking tell you. And this one, basically, it was kind of, you know, either a matchup was good or bad. Wasn't really an in-between. And we get things going. They give us Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton in the King of the Ring final. And, you know, it was amazing. That's the issue. They gave us Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton. There was no heel turn. And you even saw both of them hesitating to use the punt, hesitating to use the belt is what Cody Rhodes was doing. And, you know, it was great. It was great. But I just wanted more payoff here. Like, I hope this just isn't a one-off between these two. I want to see this be, you know, more. I want to see an in-depth feud between these guys. And I hope this matchup alone isn't the only one we get. After that, Rhea Ripley defeats Raquel Rodriguez in a Riyadh Boulevard street fight, which was so good. 14 minutes to these ladies. And this match was just so good in a crowd which was really behind them. And, you know, obviously in Saudi Arabia, they don't really cheer for the women. And you had this great table spot where Rhea Ripley hit her, whiplash, whatever. I don't even know what her finisher is, but Riptide, I think is what it's called, from, like, on a table on the ropes and just, like, put her onto the mat. It was such a great finisher right there, and wins the matchup. Just so much fun. But then Sami Zayn defeating Karrion Kross. We're not even going to acknowledge the Sami Zayn Karrion Kross feud, because the fact they had Sami Zayn win here was just utterly just not the right choice. After that, Solo Sikoa defeats Jacob Fatu to win the United States Championship. Let me just tell you, the Solo Sikoa United States Championship run should have been paid off way better than this. This just felt like not the place and time. Felt like it should have been at SummerSlam, but is what it is. It happened. And then Jade Cargill defeats Asuka to win Queen of the Ring in an 8.5-minute matchup. Just not good. No chemistry between the two. Just a dud. Just a dud. Not recommended. Don't watch it back. But then, the main event, John Cena, CM Punk for the WWE Championship. Amazing. Amazing. And, you know, it kind of brings a tear to your eye because it was just one last time and then they overbooked it so much. Seth Rollins coming to cash in and then failing to cash in. You then had the Bron Breakker run out, Bronson Reed running out. It was just so overbooked and I absolutely loved it. It just felt so nostalgic. You know, watching Night of Champions, seeing everyone one last time, and John Cena, CM Punk, the build-up to the feud was amazing. You had the pipe bomb, you had CM Punk coming out as the Doctor of Punkonomics. I mean, just amazing, and just to end it all out with a definitive winner in John Cena at Night of Champions, just phenomenal. So, Night of Champions comes in at number 8. And then, coming in at number 7, I have WWE Evolution. That is right, the all-woman event for the WWE, and it was all women. All women, fantastic, and for some reason, it's not popping up on my feed. I wonder if I have to put WWE Evolution. There it is. WWE Evolution is the official name of it. July 13th at the State Farm Arena, Atlanta, Georgia. Only 8,000 in attendance for this, and you have to remember is that this had been coming the day after the Goldberg retirement at Saturday Night's Main Event, and AEW all in. So this was just kind of a throwaway, like no one was supposed to care about this. WWE put zero marketing into this, zero like storylines into this. And the ladies went out there on an all-women event and just tore the house down, opening it up. Becky Lynch defeating Bayley and Lara Valkyra to retain the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Such a fun matchup. You then have the NXT Women's Championship on display as JC Jane defends it against Jordynne Grace with the Blake Monroe heel turn. Loved that. You then had the Judgment Day, shockingly retaining the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. Loved that. Stephanie Stratton and Trish Stratus gave us an 8.5-minute matchup for the Women's World Championship. Very surprisingly good. Jade Cargill defeating Naomi in a no-holds-barred match was a great follow-up to their WrestleMania match, which was kind of whatever, but this matchup was 10 times better than that. Then Steffi Vicaire wins the Evolution Battle Royale for a future World Championship match. It was bad. Okay, it was a bad Royal Rumble, or not Royal Rumble, but a bad Battle Royal is what I'm trying to say. Was not good, but the main event. The main event, one of the best main events of the year, Io Sky versus Rhea Ripley for the Women's World Championship matchup. Just tearing the house down. It's weird because we've seen Io Sky versus Rhea Ripley so many times. It's like here it just felt so personal, and you could see the hard hits and just the passion between these two women just trying to put on a great display of professional wrestling, and they're brawling in the crowd, then they're brawling all over the ringside, and then they both go down. And by the way, some great fake kickouts. There's this one moment where Rhea Ripley hit a riptide from the top rope, and you're like, geez, GG, Rhea Ripley's winning the belt back. But no, Io Sky kicks out. Then Naomi comes in, cashes in, and steals the show, wins the Women's World Championship, and it ends with the Naomi cash in, and the crowd was going ballistic. Phenomenal. This caught me so off guard, and I absolutely loved it. And there were a lot of theories that she was maybe going to cash in, but it was looking like she was going to cash in more on Jade Cargill. It turns out she did not, Jade Cargill, on Tiffany Stratton, but she ended up not, and she ended up winning the Women's World Championship here. So Evolution comes in number 7. It was so much fun. I absolutely adored it. But we still have to keep on moving. And that brings us to number 6 on our list, just outside the top 5, is WrestleMania 41, night number 1. 58,000 in attendance, just under 2,000 less than night 2 of WrestleMania. And I do think WrestleMania night 1 was better this year. And, you know, it's kind of been a consensus the last few years whether night 1 or night 2 is better. And as we've kind of seen, night 2s tend to usually be better. But in this case, similar to, I'd say, WrestleMania 38, night one was better. So got night one going, and Jey Uso defeated Gunther to win the World Heavyweight Championship. It's just a moment in time, you know, and a lot of people criticize it. And is it the wrong call to have him not only win, but to submit Gunther? Yes. Yes, it's not the good call. It's not what you should have done. But what I will say is that it gave Jey Uso his WrestleMania moment, a moment that he had been deserved for so long, and he finally got it. So I just want to say, like, props to Jey Uso, got his WrestleMania moment. After that, New Day finally win the World Tag Team Championships over the War Raiders, but it was just, you know, they dragged it out for so long. They should have won it on Monday Night Raw leading up to this, but good for them. Jade Cargill and Naomi was an okay match. Like I said, the Evolution matchup was better, but then Jacob Fatu wins the United States Championship. Fun match with LA Knight. Loved that. El Grande Americano was supposed to take on Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio, of course, got hurt, so in steps Rey Fénix. Under an 8-minute matchup, but still super entertaining. Tiffany Stratton then defeats Charlotte Flair to win, regain the Women's World WWE Women's Championship in a 19-minute match. Went too long, didn't have any chemistry, wasn't a good match, so not good, but what saved night number one, what saved WrestleMania as a whole, was the 10 out of 10 night one main event between CM Punk, Roman Reigns, and Seth freaking Rollins. 32 minutes and 55 seconds, the longest match from WrestleMania as a whole, and it was amazing. The storyline, CM Punk walking out to his old theme song playing over a promo package. You then had Roman Reigns walking out with, I think he walked out with, CM Punk or Roman Reigns walked out with Paul Heyman. It was like the battle for Paul Heyman leading up to this. And of course, Seth Rollins was in the mix, and then the heel turn with Paul Heyman siding with Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins walking out victorious, just phenomenal, head to toe. This was great. this was great, and I mean, it was just the match alone, the best match of WrestleMania. And, you know, obviously, the in-ring stuff is, you know, nothing mind-blowing. The women had more in their triple threat match on night two, but in terms of the entire, like, the storyline, just the emotion, like, you felt it so much here, and it's what catapulted WrestleMania night one to land at number six on the every single PLE ranked for the year. But. What we had next was kind of WrestleMania 2.0. That was SummerSlam this year, and SummerSlam elected to go to two nights. And SummerSlam night one was so much fun. It was so much fun to the point where you're like, are they going to top it on night number two? I mean, I don't even know. But SummerSlam night number one here, of course, coming to you from MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. 53,000 in attendance, August 2nd. Absolutely loved it. We got the night going with a bang. Roman Reigns teaming with Jey Uso to take on Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. 21-minute match. So much fun. And mind you, you know, we've seen, like, these two all kind of pair together well, but there's this moment where Roman Reigns does, like, a swanton dive, like, to the outside of the ring, like, similar to, like, The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25, just overshoots, almost injures himself. Phenomenal. After that, Alexa Bliss and Charlotte Flair finally win the Women's Tag Team Championship in such a good match. The crowd was loving it. And then, you know, Sami Zayn defeats Karrion Kross. 8-minute match. It was bad. We can leave it there. Tiffany Stratton defeats Jade Cargill for the Women's Championship. 7-minute match. Squash match. Awful. We'll leave it there. But then, Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul defeating Randy Orton and Jelly Roll in such a fantastic matchup. And take that, Travis Scott, because Jelly Roll is a better in-ring performer than you. How does that feel? How does it feel that Jelly Roll is a better WWE wrestler than you, Travis Scott? Suck on that. But no, amazing work. Amazing work from Jelly Roll. Absolutely loved it. And he took the fall here. He took the pin. He ate some big shots. I freaking loved it. Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul winning this matchup. So much fun. And then the main event. CM Punk and Gunther in a 30-minute war for the World Heavyweight Championship. Just great. Just great. And like I said, slow build here. You know, that's how CM Punk and Gunther kind of work. You know, they never really start off with like a bang right off the bat, but just ends with CM Punk hitting the go to sleep, finally pinning Gunther. It's such an amazing moment. He's celebrating and then burn it down. Out comes Seth Rollins on the crutches. One of the best moments of 2025. Comes down. He says, you know what? Once I'm healed, I'm coming to get you. Turns around, begins to go back up, then pauses. Outstretches his arms, pushes away the crutches. The injury was a facade. Takes the briefcase, goes down, beats CM Punk with it, and ends his reign at only like 2 minutes. Seth Rollins leaves SummerSlam as the World Heavyweight Championship. I think it's better than maybe his WrestleMania 31 cash-in. I mean, he faked literally everyone, the entire WWE Universe, that he had an injury. Turned out he didn't, and he steals CM Punk's moment. It kind of made everyone go, okay, Triple H, you ain't playing around with SummerSlam this year. You are not playing around. I cannot wait to see how good night two is. And you may wonder, Zach, does night two come in at number four? No. It'll come in a bit higher. As coming in at number four, I cannot believe it's coming in at number four, we have WWE Crown Jewel. Just no way. No way that WWE Crown Jewel was able to come in at number four on events of the year. Because it was. It was so shockingly good. It took me off guard. 13,000 in arena in Perth, Australia, October 11th. And this card just kind of came out of nowhere. They're kind of just like, yeah, we're just going to put Crown Jewel on October. Let's do it. Only 5 matchups, but just amazing. Kicking it off, Bronson Reed defeats Roman Reigns in an Australian street fight, as he should. This gave so much more credit to Bronson Reed. People taking Bronson Reed way more serious now after he picked up the victory over Roman Reigns. You then had Stephanie Vaquer defeating Tiffany Stratton to become the Women's Crown Jewel Champion winner. I have no idea what the Crown Jewel Championship is still a thing, but a great moment there. And then, you know, is it the best matchup of the year? It might be. It might be John Cena versus AJ Styles, 27 minutes, Crown Jewel. I think it is match of the year for a lot of people. For me, it's up there, but just amazing. Just simply amazing. Crown Jewel, just John Cena, AJ Styles, all the hits. They did Bray Wyatt's Sister Abigail finish. AJ Styles came out in his throwback TNA gear. There was a great ring introduction for him. They were doing all the hits to one another. This was 10 out of 10. Fantastic. Dare I say 11 out of 10. That's how freaking good it is. 100% good isn't good enough. John Cena versus AJ Styles was amazing. You then give fan service as Io Sky and the hometown favorite Rhea Ripley defeat the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka and Kairi Sane. And then The singles match for the 2025 WWE Crown Jewel Championship, Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes, 29 minutes and 40 seconds of some of the best professional wrestling I've ever seen. Like, truly, these two brought out the best in one another. And what annoyed me the most about Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes is the fact that this isn't in a proper feud, since we know how much chemistry these two have together. We need these two to have a proper feud in 2026, for goodness sake, because these two tore the house down. Perfect way to main event the card, and that's what lands Crown Jewel at the number four spot on PLEs for the year. But what are the top three, you may ask, Zachary? What are the top three WWE PLEs of the year? Well, coming in at number three is, of course, the Royal Rumble. 70,000 in attendance at Lucas Oil Stadium on February 1st to watch, witness, however you want to put it, the Royal Rumble. And, you know, was it a good Royal Rumble this year? You know, it was made to be seen. You know, of course, the women's lasted an hour and 10 minutes. Charlotte Flair last eliminates Roxanne Perez. Biggest highlight from that match is Alexa Bliss with her pop coming out. But overall, not the best Women's Royal Rumble. Okay, it wasn't the best, but you know, when you're watching it live, it's not as bad as like trying to like go back and when you think about it, you're like, oh, this wasn't good. But the two matchups we had before the Men's Royal Rumble, DIY defeating the Motor City Machine Guns to retain the WWE Tag Team Championship. Very fun match. Very fun match. Gave them 14 minutes. Really fun. Really, really fun. And then one of the best matchups of the entire year, Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens, ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Championship. It was brutal. The spots both these guys took were insane. The finish was insane, with Cody Rhodes literally killing Kevin Owens to then win the belt. This was phenomenal. I watched it with all my college buddies who don't watch professional wrestling, and they're watching this going absolutely bananas with me. So this was so much fun. One of the best matches of the year, and such just a hidden gem. You know, it happens so early in the year, you kind of forget about it, but such a hidden gem of a matchup. After that, the Men's Royal Rumble, an hour and 20 minutes, Jey Uso wins by eliminating John Cena. But just doesn't tell, you know, you how good it is. We forget that it started off with Rey Mysterio and Penta, for goodness sakes. Roman Reigns coming out, CM Punk coming out, John Cena coming out, massive pops. And then, of course, you also had Seth Rollins in the mix. You had Logan Paul. You had so many heavy hitters in this. And then you even had Joe Hendry in the Royal Rumble. What a great moment that was. And then when it came down to it, the final three ended up being Logan Paul, John Cena, and Jey Uso. Logan Paul goes out and you're like, oh my gosh, John Cena's gonna win, and they give it to Jey Uso. Now, did it end up working out? No, but we're gonna take this for what it was, and that the WWE gave Jey Uso a massive shot here. Did it end up paying off? Probably not, but they gave him a shot. It actually gave him a lot of heat, funny enough, but I was sad to see John Cena lose. But just overall, the Royal Rumble this year was so much fun. I would say it was the best Royal Rumble in the last, it was better than the last three, I'll tell you that. You know, this was the better Royal Rumble in the last, like, 5 years or something. I kid you not. So much fun. Which brings us to the number two event of 2025, and that is WWE Elimination Chamber. Coming to you from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Rogers Center, 38K in attendance, March 1st. This was an insane event. Kick things off. Get it going. Women's Elimination Chamber. Now, the Women's Chamber this year, pretty good. I know we talked about the War Games, the Money in the Bank, the Royal Rumble all sucked. The Elimination Chamber match for the women's was so much fun. 29 minutes, Bianca Belair outsurvives Alexa Bliss, Bayley, Liv Morgan, Naomi, and Roxanne Perez. And the best part is we opened it up with the return of Jade Cargill, who comes out and attacks Naomi. This was fantastic. I utterly loved that. That was so good. After that, of course, Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus defeat Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. Boring. Boring. Not worth it. Don't check it out. Just kind of mid. Whatever. It should have been Tiffany versus Trish Stratus. Not a tag team matchup. And then we get the unsanctioned match between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, which is a lot of people's collective number one matchup of the year. I think it was until John Cena and AJ Styles came along. But this matchup is still so amazing. Easily the best matchup between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens that I've seen maybe of all time. I mean, 27 minutes of just brutality, of just storytelling, of just them going across the arena and using the surroundings. And it was amazing. And it was amazing on TV. People in the arena said it was great. All you need to know is that this was a phenomenal matchup, and it was only made better by the main event, the Elimination Chamber match for a undisputed WWE Championship matchup at WrestleMania 41, John Cena defeating CM Punk, Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul, David Priest. So much fun. So much fun. And the final sequence between John Cena and CM Punk was amazing. Just so amazing. And then Seth Rollins caught CM Punk. John Cena pulls him in, capitalizing right away, putting him in the go to sleep, putting CM Punk's lights out. And then The Rock comes out. He comes out to have Cody Rhodes sell his soul to him. And he's with Travis Scott for some reason. Then John Cena, Cody Rhodes, Travis Scott, The Rock are all in the ring. And then The Rock is like, Cody, what's your answer? And Cody Rhodes, hey, Rock, go F yourself. And the crowd goes nuts. What a pop. And John Cena's like, oh, yes, yeah, suck it, goes the dab of Cody Rhodes. And then The Rock looks at him, runs his fingers across his throat, and John Cena turns heel. What a moment. What a moment. It was so much fun. I couldn't believe it. Just, you know, it's fun because it's like John Cena's heel. Like, we're not even mad at John Cena. We're almost happy because it's like we just witnessed history seeing this. And John Cena, The Rock, and Travis Scott literally just aura farming, walking out there, snapping some good photos. And I know that it went nowhere. All right, the John Cena heel turn didn't really work out at the end of the day. It was just John Cena as a heel doesn't work. We never had any follow-up with The Rock and Travis Scott. It is what it is, but the moment alone solidified this Elimination Chamber as potentially the best Elimination Chamber of all time. I kid you guys not. It was that amazing. Just simply so much fun. And then we get into the number one WWE PLE of the year, and I'll collectively say SummerSlam is the number one PLE, but more specifically, night number two comes in at number one for me. There is just something about SummerSlam night two, which I just love. I just love it so much. I watched the entire thing with my buddy Tyler, watched it on a big screen at his golf course, which he owns, and it was just so much fun. So much fun. You get things going. Naomi, Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, triple threat match for the Women's World Championship, and it's almost like they did the same thing they did with WrestleMania 41 night 2, opening it with a Women's World Championship triple threat match. And was this one as good as the one at WrestleMania? No, but that'd be like this one getting a B+, where WrestleMania gets an A+. So still amazing, still so much fun. This was a blast. And then, oh my goodness, this was one of the most fun matchups I've ever seen. A six-pack tag team tables, ladders, and chairs match for the WWE Tag Team Championship, and they gave them 16 minutes. The Street Profits versus the Motor City Machine Guns versus Fraxium versus DIY versus Andrade and Rey Fénix versus the Wyatt Six. And what was one of the craziest, like, the spots in this matchup were so crazy. Candice LeRae going from, like, up top of the ladder through a ladder. You then had every single person doing a move through someone on the outside going through a table, and then the finish with the Wyatt Six winning. You had everyone's side characters get involved. You had Lash Legend get involved for the Street Profits. You had Candice LeRae get involved for DIY. You had Zelina Vega get involved for Andrade Rey Fénix. I mean, this was just so much fun. You had the Wyatt Six get involved. I mean, oh my goodness. So much fun. One of the most rewatchable matches of 2025. After that, Becky Lynch, Lara Valkyria to end their rivalry in a no DQ, no countout, last chance match for the Intercontinental Championship. 25 minutes, and here's the thing. A lot of blunders in this matchup, went a bit too long, but they're trying to follow up the Backlash match, the Evolution match, the Money in the Bank match, which were all bangers, and it's hard to follow up. It really was. And then you had Bayley get involved, and, you know, you think Bayley's going to turn heel, she doesn't turn heel, and honestly, I felt like Lyra should have won here, if I'm being honest, but at the end of the day, good matchup overall. After that, Solo Sikoa defeats Jacob Fatu in a steel cage match for the United States Championship. Yeah, it wasn't that good. It was so mid, so mediocre. And then the big moment where Jacob Fatu does his finisher off of the top of the cage, they did in the post-match, like, to beat up the goons of the NFT. Like, I mean, like, what are you doing? Do it to Solo during the matchup, but is what it is. And then had Dirty Dominic Mysterio defeating AJ Styles to win the Intercontinental Championship. So fun. AJ Styles comes out like Eddie Guerrero style and like a low rider, and so much fun. Such a great match. And that brings us to what my favorite matchup of 2025 was. That was Cody Rhodes versus John Cena in a street fight for the Undisputed WWE Championship. And I think what WWE did here is they looked at everything they did wrong with the WrestleMania 41 main event on night two with Cody Rhodes and John Cena, and they retconned it. Because for 37 minutes and 45 seconds, these two went to war. I mean, it started with a bang. Cody Rhodes comes out in this just ceremonial, like, Dusty Rhodes type of, like, come out. You're kind of like watching that. You're like, oh my gosh, he's not losing coming out to this. And then John Cena comes out and the screen is all black. Remember, for the last 5 months, we've been watching John Cena entrances where the screen is black. Nothing fun, nothing flashy, nothing glamorous. And what does he do? He comes out with the lights shining. The old entrance is back. He comes out like crazy. And the pop is insane. The pop is insane for that. You gotta go watch that back, because John Cena's had a lot of good pops. when he comes out, and this one takes the cake. This was fantastic. Absolutely loved it. Then we get into the matchup, and they just brawl everywhere. They brawl everywhere. There's so many cool scenes here. There's a scene where they go under the entrance ramp, and it comes up with John Cena looking all menacing, hosting Cody Rhodes on his shoulder. And this was the type of heel we should have had for John Cena the entire year, where he's not necessarily a heel, but he's doing whatever it takes to win. He's not holding back, per se. So many good moments. And then the finishing sequence in the ring. I mean, it's legit. Just, is John Cena going to win? Is Cody Rhodes going to win? And finally, Cody Rhodes gets the better of John Cena, finally hitting like this eighth crossroad of the match to become the undisputed WWE champion yet again. And then he leaves. They kind of shake hands. John Cena's basket all in. And John Cena goes to leave. And you hear Brock Lesnar's entrance music, and the pop for that might have been even crazier than John Cena's. That just mean the crowd went crazy, and Brock Lesnar comes out. You haven't seen Brock Lesnar in 2 years in the WWE. I mean, this is insane. This is fantastic. And he's back, and the pop is crazy. And he comes down, and he hits John Cena with an F5, and then just walks on out of there. I mean, doesn't get much better than that. It really doesn't. It really doesn't, guys. Just 10 out of 10. For SummerSlam Night 2. And overall, for the year, like I said, you know, a lot of bad moments, but a lot of good moments for the WWE in 2025. And I think with how much bad we had, we really have to take a look at all the good over the bad. So SummerSlam Night number 2, 10 out of 10. Guys, it was a good year. Good year for WWE. Like I said, you can't look at all the bad. You gotta separate it and look at the good. So that is every single WWE PLE ranked for 2025. And I can't wait to come back and do this again for 2026. It's fun. I love ranking things. Ranking things is one of my favorite things to do. And you may be wondering yourself, oh, Zach, if you love ranking stuff so much, is that how you're going to end the episode with this ranking? How about no, as we are now going to go through every single UFC pay-per-view of 2025 and rank all of them. That's right. I'm as much of a UFC nerd as I am a WWE nerd. And let me tell you, it was a nuts year. Nuts year for the UFC. You know, they had some crazy moments. They had a lot of shockers. And what we have to do here is we have to go through and we have to rank every single event. There were 13 that went down in 2025. So without further ado, it's been a fun episode, the 250th episode. So we got to go out with a bang. So here's every single UFC pay-per-view ranked from 2025. Coming in at number 13 on the list, the worst UFC pay-per-view of the year, hands down, UFC 312. It was bad. It was a bad event. And the main card, for just for starters, like, you have to remember, like, you pay $85 with ESPN Plus, which you already pay like $10 for a month. So you're paying like $185 for these five fights. The five fights you got was Jake Matthews versus Francisco Prado, Jimmy Crute versus Rodolfo Bellotto, Talashon Teixeira versus Justin Taffa, Zhang Weili versus Tatia Suara for the Women's Strawweight Championship, and Dricius du Plessis versus Sean Strickland for the Middleweight Championship. So when we talk about pay-per-views, that's what we're really talking about. Because you can kind of find the prelims out and about, sometimes on ESPN, sometimes just casually on ESPN+, but that's what we really have to weigh heavy when we look at this card. And when we also factor in the prelims, these are some, you know, whatever prelims. We obviously had the great debut of Quinlan Sakyaad, who won Rookie of the Year, in my opinion, 19-second knockout of Anshul Jubilee. And you also had one of my favorite fights of the year, Rong Zhu versus Cody Steele, made the top five for fights of the year for me. But other than that, you know, Alexander Topira debuted, which was nice. Jonathan Mikhlef debuted, which was nice. Wayne Kong had a bounce-back win here. Tom Nolan won in front of his home crowd, but just kind of mediocre. We get into the main card. Jake Matthews versus Francisco Prado is just your run-of-the-mill fight. Then Jimmy Crute and Rodolfo Bellotto is a draw. Talashon Teixeira starching Justin Taffa was kind of comical, if anything, just how easy he made it look. And then we sat through 50 straight minutes of boring action. Zhang Weili versus Tatia Suarez is unbelievably boring. Tatia Suarez wins round one, only to lose the next four rounds, and Zhang Weili can't even finish her. We then go to the main event, Dricius du Plessis and Sean Strickland, and these dudes just are not engaging, and they're each blaming each other. Sean Strickland is saying he was waiting for DDP, DDP saying he's waiting for Sean Strickland, and the biggest excitement we have is Sean Strickland breaking his nose and fixing it mid-round. So UFC 312, it's just kind of been a consensus the entire year that this was the worst event of the year, and it comes in at number 13. 2019. Coming in at number 12 was a close runner-up for worst event of the year. That was UFC 321. And now, while some people may think this is the worst event of the year, it is not. It is not. It is the second worst, in my opinion, but it is not the worst. So we kick things off, you know, kind of just four run-of-the-mill prelims, but you do have a hidden banger. Nathaniel Wood versus Jose Delgado was fantastic. We then went on a little run with Walter Walker getting his third heel hook of the year. Of course, he won submission of the year with that heel hook. Not this specific one, but just all of them collectively. You also had Ludwig Klein and Matheus Rebecca in a brutal, bloody fight of the night. Quinlan Sakyad having his knockout of the year against Nasrat Haqparast. That was fantastic. And then, of course, we get the main card going. Azamat Mirzakhanov knocking out Alexander Rakic in 3 minutes with only three punches. You can't make it up. Then Alexander Volkov, Halton Almeida. Very boring split decision. You know, we know about this. The split decision shouldn't have gone to Volkov, and it just wasn't a good fight overall. The fact Halton Almeida had 11 minutes of control time, which, when we look at that, that's two whole rounds of the fight he controlled and didn't win. It just shows you how bad the fight was. We then also had Umar Nurmagomedov versus Mauro Bautista, which was a super fun fight. Mackenzie Dern and Fyodor Jandy-Dobo was not as bad as people will tell you it was. But then the main event, the eye poke, Tom Aspinall, Ciryl Gane, just kind of killed the vibe. It really did. That's what's going to have this set here at the second worst pay-per-view of the year at number 12. And, you know, I get a lot of people criticizing Tom Aspinall, but I guess we'll never know. We'll never know how he truly felt getting poked in the eye, which I think is going to be one of the biggest impactors in, you know, whether he ever returns, is if he can recover from this eye poke, which is apparently way worse than people thought it was and it looked like, but yeah, UFC 321 did have some highlights with some finishes and fight of the nights, but yeah, overall comes in at number 12. Coming in at number 11 is going to be UFC 315. Now, UFC 315 coming at you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Of course, Bilal Muhammad versus Jack Del Maddalena in the main event. And prelims, I'd say better than the previous two. Get things going. Behzad Almakhan knocks out Brad Katona in 1 minute. Marc-Andre Barliut has a fantastic bounce back KO in front of a hometown crowd with a performance of the night elbow knockout in 87 seconds. You then also have Modestus Bukauskas and Navajo Sterling winning, just kind of boring fights, if you will. But then Jasmine Jesse DeVicious submits Jessica Andrade, which was fun. Mike Mallet knocks out Charles Radke to close out the prelims. We go to the main card, Benoit Saint-Denis submits Kyle Prepelic, and then the rest of the way was decisions. But they weren't awful, you know, Natalia Silva versus Alexa Grasso, it was kind of just Silva outstriking her the entire fight. There was this cool moment where Silva was literally putting the pressure on her with literally like a big 1-2. You kind of thought Grasso was in trouble, but other than that, it was whatever. Ahmed Zahabi and Jose Aldo was pretty fun. Ahmed Zahabi kind of won the first two rounds, and then round three, Aldo almost knocks him out with the knee, only for Zahabi to recover. Cover and win the fight, which was Jose Aldo's retirement as well, so entertaining there. Then Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Fiorot was, you know, it was better than Zhang Weili versus Valentina Shevchenko, and it was better than Zhang Weili versus Tatiana Suarez. Of our three women's title fights, actually four women's title fights, I'd have this as the second best, right behind, who was it, Kayla Harrison and Julia Pena. That's just because that ended quickly, but other than that, not too bad. And then the main event, Jack Del Maddalena and Bilal Muhammad, a fight of the night, a super big war. And really props to both these guys for bringing out the best in one another. Like, truly, I think we saw the best version of both of these guys on this night. And Jack Del Maddalena shockingly won and became your new men's welterweight champion for a brief period this year. For about a, I would say, 5-month period, Jack Del Maddalena was, I guess, the best welterweight on the planet. Good for him. UFC 315 overall, just, you know, some good, some bad, just kind of whatever. Which brings us into the top 10. Coming in at number 10 is UFC 313, just a bit ahead of UFC 315. And that's just because I think there were, you know, some more memorable moments on this card. And that's, you know, in part, you know, a lot of fights were canceled or switched out here. I mean, we got to this card and we only had 10 fights for a full pay-per-view card. Now, main card overall went 3 out of 5. Prelims were kind of decent. Joshua Van defeated the undefeated Ray Tezura to kick off his amazing 2025. Bruno Ferreira submitted Armin Petrosian. Carlos Lille knocked out Alex Morono. Good stuff there. We get to the main card, and one of the best knockouts of the year, Mauricio Ruffy, King Green, the spinning back kick, legendary. utterly legendary, easily the most famous part from this, just the most memorable from this card was that knockout. Amanda Lemos and Yasmin Lucindo was legit a wormhole of awfulness, just sucking the life out of this card as Amanda Lemos grapples Yasmin Lucindo to death. No idea how that wound up on the main card. But when I look back, it made sense as they were both top 10 athletes in their division. After that, Ignacio Bahomadez makes quick work of Jalen Turner, submitting him with a triangle choke in 2.5 minutes. And then Justin Gaethje and Hafal Fiziev run it back from their first fight on short notice, as it was supposed to be Dan Hooker, but instead Fiziev steps in and delivers another fight of the night. And honestly, when I look back through the year, probably in the top 25 for fights of the year. You can even say top 20. This was an absolute war between these two, and we saw a different game element of Hafal Fiziev, which is with his grappling in this one. With that, we got into the main event, and was Magomed Ankalaev versus Alex Pereira one good? No, it was not good. But at the same time, Magomed dominated Pereira. And, you know, as boring as it was, you're watching it, and you're still waiting for that one-punch knockout. You're still waiting for the one-punch knockout. And when it ended, you really went, wow, Magomed won this fight. And you know what? It didn't end with a bang, but the reason it comes in ahead of 3:15 is because of the Gaethje-Fiziev fight, because of the knockout with Mauricio Ruffi, and literally those two is what carried it. So I got 3:13, just a bit ahead. I think that and 3:15 are almost interchangeable, and from here on out is a different element of rankings for the year. So coming in are just like a different level when it comes to the rankings, in terms of goodness, if you will. So coming in at number nine, we've UFC 316, Merab Dvalishvili versus Sean O'Malley 2, coming at you from Newark, New Jersey, and this was a fun card. You know, we get things going. Of course, Quinlan Sakyad picking up his second win of the year. Jusang Yu had one of the best knockouts of the year against Jekka Sergei, literally springboard flat knocking his face onto the canvas. A couple of decent fights. Wang Kong destroys Ariana Da Silva. Andreas Gustafsson mauls Chaos Williams. And Waldo Cortes Acosta picks up a win in this year. I mean, the year of Waldo Cortes Acosta, his second win of the year. To close out the prelims, we have knockouts from Osmat Mirzakhanov and Joshua Van. Joshua Van utterly just beating the brakes off of Bruno Silva was so fun. Knocking him out with just under a minute left in the entire fight. Phenomenal. Go to the main card. Here's the thing. The main card starts off great. Kevin Holland submits Vicente Luque with his signature anaconda choke a minute into round number two. Such a great win for Kevin Holland. But then, back-to-back boring fights. The debut of Patchy Mix goes awful as him and Mario Bautista put on a sleeper fest. But I will say, this did give Mario Bautista a bit more props here. He landed 173 significant strikes somehow. I have no idea how, but he did. After that, Joe Pyfer and Calvin Gastelum is looking like a fantastic round one knockout for Joe Pyfer. He drops him twice in round one. No idea how Calvin survives. We're like, he's out of there in round two. Not only does he fight back, he almost wins the freaking fight, for goodness sakes. Gastelum and Pyfer really draining us, and we're kind of like, oh my gosh, this is so boring. We go to the co-main event, Kayla Harrison, Julia Pena. Thankfully, Kayla Harrison gets her out of there with 5 seconds left in round number two with a Kimura to finally win the Women's Bantamweight Championship. Thank you, Kayla Harrison, saving us. Now just continue to win. You got a big test against Amanda Nunes coming up in 2026. You have to win. We then go to the main event, Merab and Sean O'Malley, and this is just a whole different level of Merab we saw here. This was a Merab who had zero fear of Sean O'Malley striking. You know, when we look at their first fight at UFC 306, there was no hesitation from him. He's shooting takedowns recklessly. He is standing in the pocket. He is landing heavier strikes on Sean O'Malley. And to make matters better, he didn't let Sean land a significant strike in round number three. Takes him down, then submits him with a reverse guillotine choke. Domination from Merab. And we ended it with with a Merab submission, which no one had been expecting. 18 seconds left in round number three. I mean, such a great moment for Merab Dvalishvili. So shout out to Merab, UFC 316. It was pretty decent, pretty good, and I will say it is collectively better than the four before it. But I'll tell you what is a bit better than UFC 318, not 316, I mean, what's better than 316 is 318 is what I'm trying to say. UFC 318, New Orleans, Louisiana, July 19th, the retirement fight of Dustin Poirier. And man, of all the cards to get all of their fights surviving, this was quite the one. 14 freaking fights. I mean, start off with a bang, all right? Let me just tell you, the first five fights all ending, actually six fights, all ending in finish. I mean, Carly Giudice knocks out Nicole Cagliari with a knee. Brutal. Bruno Ferreira submits Jackson Vigmay in round one with an armbar. Ryan Spann submits Lucas Brzezik with a round one guillotine choke. Jimmy Crute wins his first fight in 5 years with a round one armbar. Islam Dulatov has a performance of the night knockout. Ateba Gaudier has a performance of the night knockout. And you have a fight of the night between Brendan Allen and Marvin Vettori. Amazing. We then go to the main card, and like I said, the first six fights were all finishes. The last seven were all decisions. Now, you know, I will say Michael Johnson, Daniels Luber, not the most entertaining, but watching Michael Johnson win was a feat to itself. Patricio Pitbull and Dan Ige absolutely sucked. We can call it how it is. I'll tell you what didn't suck. Dave Rodriguez versus Kevin Holland. I have no idea how Daniel Rodriguez versus Kevin Holland didn't win fight of the night. Instead, it gave it to Vettori and Allen. Which, by the way, Marvin Vettori and Brendan Allen was amazing. It was the third best fight on this card. The second best was Dane Rodriguez, Kevin Holland. This was an absolute war. This was phenomenal. We go to the co-main event. Paulo Costa, Roman Kapilov. I think what this was just hesitancy from Roman Kapilov. That's all this was, because we saw the knockout power there. He just never uncorked it, and it was a lame, you know, co-main event. But then, the main event, Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier. It was awesome. It was awesome. And to make matters better, is Max Holloway almost knocked Dustin out round number one. And you were like, there's no way. Dustin, he's not going out like this. We go to round two. Dustin almost knocks Max Holloway out. That was just utterly insane. And yes, Max Holloway dominated him pretty much the entire fight. But Dustin fought like hell, just fighting through the punches, throwing anything he had at him. And it was such a beautiful send-off to Dustin Poirier. So UFC 318 also does hold a special place in my heart, as it was the final event I watched at my senior college home. You know, it was the last night there, and of course it aligned with me being able to watch UFC pay-per-view. So UFC 318 comes in at number 8. Very good work. And then we dive into our next pay-per-view, which is UFC 319. And UFC 319, I would consider at number 7 here, another chain in terms of our rankings. You know, if you have trash, good, great, and S tier, we are now kind of getting into the good to great category here. And UFC 319, you know, there's going to be haters of this and there's going to be supporters. I'm a supporter of this card. I love it so much. We kick things off. Joseph Morales submits Albi Idris to win the Ultimate Fighter. We then go through, you know, two decisions, but then Alexander Hernandez knocks out Chase Hooper with 2 seconds left in round number one. Crazy. Lupi Godinez cements herself at women's strawweight, defeating Jessica Andrade. Michael Olkojacek knocks out Jerome Mearshart. Bossinger Suzukarov, of course, wins his second fight in 4 days, coming off of the Contender Series, submitting Eric Nolan. We get into the main card. Tim Elliott submits Kaya Sakura. I mean, made such easy work of him, and we really got to give Tim Elliott props here, because this was literally a setup fight to give Kaya Sakura a knockout, and he absolutely dominated him. So great work to Tim Elliott. After that, Michael Page, Jared Cannonier, a boring fight, a very boring fight. You know, it sucked. It wasn't good. It is what it is. But I'll tell you what. Getting into the third and second to last fights of the night, Carlos Prates spinning back elbow knockout with a second left in round number one over Jeff Neal had me going nuts. You know me, I'm a Carlos Prates stan. I love Carlos Prates. This was amazing. We then get to the co-main event. Lerone Murphy, Aaron Pico. Aaron Pico is just putting the pressure on Lerone in his debut, staying in his face, landing big shots, landing takedowns, and then Lerone unkirks the nastiest spinning back elbow I've seen and puts his lights out cold. I think it was my runner-up for knockout of the year. I kid you not. I think this one runner-up for knockout of the year for me. This was amazing. This was amazing. It's one of the greatest back-to-back knockout streaks I've ever seen. Two spinning back elbows, both round one, both amazing. Carlos Prates, Lerone Murphy, single-handedly given UFC Chicago, UFC 319, a great run. And then the main event. And I get it. There's going to be people that hate this. It's just Hamzat Chimaev grappling Justus Duplessis to death. But you have to appreciate this for what it was. You really do. And that's the fact, is that Justus Duplessis had been on one of the craziest winning streaks I've ever seen. He was like 9-0 in the UFC. He had won his last 16 fights in a row. He'd been on a crazy run, you know, hadn't lost yet, hadn't really been in trouble. When he had bounced back. But here, Khamzat destroys him, utterly mauls him, 21 minutes and 40 seconds of control time, 529 total strikes to 45 in favor of Khamzat. Through the first two rounds, Driscus couldn't land a significant strike. Through the first four rounds, he only landed three significant strikes. For the entire fight, he only landed 13 significant strikes. I mean, just crazy. Just utterly insane. Gotta give props to Khamzat, moving to 15-0, undisputed middleweight champion. I get it. It wasn't what anyone expected, but I still had fun watching it. So, the spinning back elbows, the finishes, the moments on here. UFC 319 lands at number 7. Which brings us to number 6 on our list, and it was the final event of the year, UFC 323, coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. And I think the sad part is there's really only one thing that holds us back from maybe being event of the year, and that's the co-main event. At the end of the day, Joshua Van and Alexander Pantoa, when Pantoa breaks his arm. Other than that, I mean, this card was perfect. Can't really ask for much more. We get the card going. Our first four fights are all finishes, including three round one finishes. Marlon Santos gets a big knockout of Muhammad Naimov. Ivo Baranowski and Ivo Azam put on a fantastic performance of the night knockout. I mean, that was crazy. That was a minute and 29 seconds of just pure chaos between those two. Let me tell you that. Jalen Turner then returns after retiring and earlier in the year and just kills Edson Barbosa. Kind of sad to see. Bruno Fajera defeats Marvin Vettori. Fair Zayam knocks out Nazim Sadiqov. Chris Duncan makes quick work of Terrence McKinney in round one. Manuel Torres knocks out Grant Dawson. We go with the main card, and I mean, Kambalovich, Bogdan Guskov fight to a draw, but it's super entertaining. Peyton Talbot retires Sammy Cejudo in bloody fashion. And Tetsuo Taira freaking TKO's Brandon Moreno. No one's done that to Brandon Moreno, and my boy Tetsuo Taira did. Then, of course, Joshua Van, Alexander Pantoa, didn't work out how he wanted to, but the main event, Peter Yan, Merab Dovizioso, fight of the night, one of the best fights of the year. So much fun. So, UFC 323, kind of the turning point between the bottom seven and the top five here, coming in at number 6. And I'll just say, you know, it kind of sucks it ended how it did, but at the same time, we got to take this card for what it was, and what it was a lot of fun. With that, we get into the top five, and the top five are truly the top five. Kind of interchangeable, if you ask me, but this is my top five. This is my top five at the end of the day. First one up, UFC 311, the first pay-per-view of the year. And as long as I've been watching, the first pay-per-view of the year has never held up against the rest of the year. And for some reason, this one did. Now, we start 311 off, five run-of-the-mill decisions. You know, on the prelims, we have two finishes. That's about it. But it's the main card. It's the main card. And you got to remember, with main cards, you're paying. You're paying your hard-earned American, your hard-earned Canadian, your hard-earned European money for these fights. And this is one of the rare cards where all five fights deliver. We open up. Rare Day Ritter makes easy work of Kevin Holland, submits him in round one. We follow that up. Holland Almeida and Sergey Spivak giving us one of the most entertaining round one grappling sprees I've ever seen. You know, there's one moment where Sergey Spivak is literally on top of Holland Almeida, pounding his head in. And then you blink, and a minute later, Halton's on top, and he gets the round one TKO. One of the best fights of the year. Jiří Procházka, Jamal Hill, round three knockout for Jiří. Absolutely love him. And, you know, next episode, we're going to be doing a ranking every title fight, but I don't want to spoil anything, but Merab versus Umar Nurmagomedov in the co-main event. One of the best title fights of the year. Let me tell you, Merab kicked off his fantastic 2025 with this beautiful victory over Umar Nurmagomedov. And then we cap off the night. Islam submits Hanato in easy fashion. I always love watching Islam Makhachev fight. It's the closest I'll get to seeing Khabib again, and he's so much fun. So, UFC 311, it has stood the test of time the entire year. It is amazing, and it comes in at number 5 on our list. Now, coming in at number 4, gentlemen, Las Vegas, International Fight Week, UFC 317, Topuria versus Oliveira. This card was so much fun. Kicking it off, boring decision. But then, Jacoby Smith mutilates Nico Price, submitting him in round number 2. Terrence McKinney gets a 55-second knockout. Jose Delgado knocks out Hydra Meal in 26 seconds with a knee. And how do we end the prelims? A Gregory Rodriguez knockout of Jack Hermanson, which is so brutal. Catches him with a hook, and Hermanson literally goes limp. Like, you know in UFC where you just literally, like, land like a hook and the guy literally just falls backwards? It literally looked just like that. I kid you not. After that, we get into the main card, and Peyton Talbot gets it's a bounce back win, good for him. But Benil Dariush then defeats Renato Moicano in a little comeback fight for him. And then What a great three-fight run. Joshua Van, Brandon Rival, your 2025 Fight of the Year winner. Man, what an absolute war. And to make matters better, Joshua Van went on from this to fight for a belt and then the year's champion. The year of Joshua Van. What a guy. Co-main event, Pantoa and Kai Kara France. Pantoa makes very easy work of Kai Kara France. I mean, poor Kai Kara France. Just could never catch a break on fighting the best of the best in their prime. And then the knockout of the year, one of the best moments. Topira just puts Oliveira's lights out in under 2.5 minutes. Just brutal, just bloody. And the run that Topira is currently on, I know he hasn't fought since this fight, but we have to understand the last three guys he's knocked out are Charles Oliveira, Max Holloway, and Alexander Volkanovski. That's insane. That's actually insane when we think about it. So UFC 319, one of the 317, one of the best international fight weeks that I've ever seen, and it comes in at number 4 on our list of best pay-per-views for the year. Coming in at number 3, we have UFC 314 coming to you live from Miami, Florida. And I mentioned it before, but Zeke Clark, we've had on the podcast before. He was actually in attendance at this with either some of his family or friends, whoever it was. And this card was great. Really was. 4 of the first 5 fights were finishes to open the card. We then kicked things off to end out the prelims with a Danny Gay comeback. Round 3 knockout of Sean Woodson. We go to the main card. Dominic Reyes recreates the Conor McGregor Jose Aldo knockout by knocking out Nikita Krylov. Gene Silva then defeats Bryce Mitchell in one of the best rivalries of the year, one of the best build-ups to a fight that we've seen in a while. Yair versus Pitbull was absolutely awful, but then the main event and co-main event, Paddy Pimblett mauls Michael Chandler, defeats him in round number 3. And as a Paddy Pimblett fan, I was losing my mind. Like, Paddy Pimblett is one of my favorite fighters. The fact he's fighting Justin Gaethje to kick off the year is going to be nuts. And I absolutely loved him destroying Michael Chandler. Then the main event, Volkanovski, Lopez, and as someone who picked Lopez round 2 knockout, if you watch the fight, you have to know how crazy I was going when he almost knocked Volk out. It was nuts, but these two fought until the end. The chin on both of these guys is insane. It truly is. Lopez and Volk, and they're going to be running it back to end out January, so keep your eyes open, keep your ears peeled, because, we're in for a banger when these two rematch. But Miami, I mean, what can you ask for the main card? 4 of the 5 hits were all amazing. 4 of the 5 fights were all hits. And then, you know, for the prelims, you know, I'll say this. Of the prelims, you know, of the, you know, 8 we had, 5 were finishes. And I would consider that a successful prelims at the end of the day, which is why UFC 314 lands at number 3 for pay-per-views of the year. Which brings us into our top 2. So if you've had your little thing out, you know which 2 are left. But coming in at number 2 for me is UFC 322, Madison Square Garden, New York City, November 15th. That is right. The November cards are always insane. They always go down at Madison Square Garden, and this one did not disappoint. Opening the card up, you know, random decision, and then Bosnir Susakarov, round 3 knockout of Eric McConco, one of the better knockouts of the year, and he completes his second fight of the year coming off the Contender Series, which he had just fought in August, the year of Bosnir Susakarov, almost won Rookie of the Year because of that. Fatima Klaim completes her Rookie of the Year for the women's division as she defeats Angela Hill. Pat Sabatini grapples Jeppe Mariscal to death. Then Kyle Daukaus, back for his second fight in the UFC since being cut in 2022, and he submits Jeremy Richard in 50 seconds. Absolute legend. Ethan Ewing becomes immortalized as he steps in on short notice to take on the hottest prospect at bantamweight in Malcolm Wellmaker, and he aces him across all 3 rounds. Aaron Blanchfield defeats Trace Cortez, ending their rivalry, and Gregor Rodriguez picks up his second win of the year, defeating Roman Kopilov. And then we get into the best 4-fight knockout streak I think I'll ever see. I mean, just the highest level, the best knockouts. This was insane. To round out the prelims, Bo Nickel knocks out Rodolfo Vieira in round 3 with a head kick. Just came out of nowhere, perfectly set up, and just reigniting the Bo Nickel hype train. After that, we go to the main card. Benoit Saint-Denis, Benil Dariush, your comeback fighter of the year, Benoit Saint-Denis, after going 0-2 in 2024, completes his 2025 year with a 16-second faceplant knockout of Benil Dariush. I'm so excited to see BSD take over in 2026. I'm telling you, Dan Hooker, you chop the liver, and then when he gets a title shot, he's coming for that belt. We go to the next one. Carlos Prates, Leon Edwards. Carlos Prates becomes the first man ever to knock out Leon Edwards. Just crazy. Just crazy. I mean, Aussie, I think he was the first man to ever knock down Leon Edwards, if I'm thinking about that right. And to make matters better, Leon is just hanging on him in round number one. And Carlos is just like shrugging his shoulders, making just like a bruh face, and comes out there on course with just a normal straight. Like the power he possesses, puts his lights out, and the follow-up punch to the ground. Oh, violent, brutal. I love you, Carlos Prates. We then kick it off, or complete it, I should say, not kick it off. Complete it with Michael Morales starching Sean Brady to become the number one contender at welterweight. I mean, come on, Michael Morales over Ian Garry at the end of the day. 3 minutes, 27 seconds, knocks out Sean Brady. Four knockouts, four performance bonuses of the night. Fantastic. And then, you know, those alone is what land this as the number two pay-per-view of the year, but... You know, I do got to give credit to Valentin Shevchenko and Islam Makhachev. They both won. They both dominated. And the fights weren't entertaining, but at the end of the day, Valentin Shevchenko finally answered the question on who was better between her and Zhang Wei Li, cementing herself as the number two greatest women's fighter of all time. She's right behind Amanda Nunes, and yes, she's ahead of Ronda Rousey, let me tell you, ahead of Kayla Harrison, ahead of Chris Cyborg. Valentina is the number two of all time, and right now in the UFC, number one pound for pound. And for the men's, you know, Islam becomes double champ, cements himself as number one pound for pound fighter. And, you know, people are going to say it was a layup of a matchup for Jack Del Maddalena, but to his credit, he couldn't finish Jack Del Maddalena. And Islam had been out here finishing literally everyone they threw at him. So we got to give a shout-out to, you know, Jack Del Maddalena in that aspect, as he was able to survive everything Islam threw at him. Now, I will say 19 minutes of control time is kind of boring. Literally didn't win a single minute of this fight, but you know what, he still tried, and even got to a point in round five where Islam literally didn't even shoot for a significant strike. He just landed a takedown and held him there. So Jack Del Maddalena, you lost, but still gotta give you props. So Madison Square Garden, you gave me just some of the highest highs that I've ever had watching this card. And props my mans, props to UFC 322, the number two pay-per-view of 2025. Which brings us to the number one pay-per-view in 2025. What could it be? What could it be, you may wonder? And there is an answer, in my opinion, and it's a card that went 5 for 5. It's a card that delivered. It is UFC 320 in Las Vegas, Nevada, October 4th. And, you know, we go with the prelims. Nothing too special, I'll say. Ateba Gaudier, Daniel Santos, Emin Shabazian giving us some great knockouts. Ramiz Brahimaj submitting Austin Vanderford. That was fun. You know, I will say great bounce back wins for Fareed Bashrat, Yana Santos, Punali Soriano, Jacob Wilcox defeating Patchy Mix was something to be seen. But the main card maker breaks these events. And we go on the main card. Joe Pyfer submits Abus Magomedov. And to make matters better, he lost round one to Abus to only go out, drop him at the start of round two, and then submit him. So much fun. Yusuf Zalal then makes the quickest work of Josh Emmett I've ever seen. Zero total strikes, zero significant strikes. Yusuf Zalal goes out there, lands a takedown, locks up an armbar, game over. Yusuf Zalal jumping into the top 10. Then your comeback fight of the year, Jiří Procházka, Khalil Roundtree Jr., down two rounds, down, you could even put it at 13 minutes. Jiří Procházka knocks out Khalil with 2 minutes left in the fight, and I was going nuts. I was like, there's no way, just swinging against the cage. Jiří clips him coming up, and Khalil face plants lifeless to the mat. So much fun. The co-main event then, Merab, Corey Sandhagen. This is 25 minutes of Merab just smothering Corey Sandhagen, almost knocking him out in round number two with the punches, taking him down 20 times. Corey Sandhagen had no chance to even get going. I mean, he would hit Merab with a punch, Merab would smile, and then throw back two punches of his own that both land clean. Phenomenal. And then to kick it off, Alex Pereira ends Magomed Ankalaev in 1 minute and 20 seconds. Was it anticlimactic? Maybe, but that's just how good Alex Pereira is at the end of the day. Man, UFC 320. The best part about this is this was right after my birthday. It had just been my birthday, and you know, we're getting into October. I'm like, you know what? I need a good card. I need a good card to pick me up, you know, to end my birthday celebration week with a bang. And that's exactly what this was. UFC 320 is my best UFC pay-per-view of the year. Now, did it win event of the year? No, that went to UFC Paris, if you watched our last episode. But I will still say UFC 320 was the best pay-per-view of 2025. So With that, ladies and gentlemen, that is all I have. What a year. What a year in terms of fights, in terms of events, in terms of knockouts and submissions. It was a top 10 year of all time for the UFC this year. I kid you not. I know they made a lot of money, found a lot of success, and I think they are poised for a massive 2026. I can just sense that this Paramount deal is going to be a big, big deal. But that's all we have for the 250th episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of fun. Yeah, go check out Beef. Go check out Avatar Fire and Ash. Go check out the WWE once the new year starts off. The Royal Rumble is going to be fantastic. And yeah, UFC as well. We got a lot more fun stuff coming. You know, on the next episode, we'll be talking about Week 18 of the NFL. We're going to be talking about, new UFC fights that have been announced. I've been waiting. I've been letting them pile up for the new year. And then we're ranking every single fight night and every single title fight that went down in 2025. So a lot of fun, a lot of pump stuff, and I'm about to go on a trip to Texas, then I'm back down to Chicago for work, so I am going to be a bit busy. That's why I'm trying to load up on these episodes. So we're just going to get this out to you guys right now on Sunday, get this going, and I'll make sure to catch you guys next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. God bless everyone.